My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is Games Club Podcast.
And this week we are talking about Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy's Kong Quest, which is a 2D platformer developed by Rare and published by Nintendo for the SNES in 1995.
Yeah, and this is, that name is a pun.
Mm-hmm.
It really does sound like Diddy Kong's Quest. But
yes.
No, it's a Kong Quest.
Mm-hmm.
This episode is special for a couple reasons. One, this was executive produced by Travis. Big mm-hmm. thank you to Travis. Two, this is our first, I would consider, mainline Donkey Kong game.
Yeah.
And certainly with the new mythology, with the family and stuff.
Yeah.
Three, I'm going to take 1 minute here real quick.
Okay.
Go buy my record. My band put out a record. Go to modridge.bandcamp.com. You can pre-order it. You can get the vinyl. I'm going to talk about this a little bit on shows. I apologize if that's annoying to people, but it's a big deal. And we want people to know about it. So go check it out.
Yeah, do it. Their music is good.
You posted
about it on Patreon. I heard you perform some new stuff on Duckstream. I always stay up for those. Die in Debt, the lead single, whatever.
it's kind of, this is telling tales out of school.
Yeah.
In kind of a funny way. But there's some band disagreement about lead single. And that was I wrote that. So there's a conflict of interest.
Okay.
And I was like, I do think that's the lead single objectively though. And uh-huh. The band was like, I could see either way. And then everyone's like, no, that's the bop. Because we did a double A side single. Mm-hmm. Science Says Right, Andrew Number, great song. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. But it is, I wrote that to be a single. So it's a different kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
But yeah, thanks. I appreciate everybody who has listened so far and appreciate everyone's patience if this is annoying to you. Mm-hmm. You know, I get to do this.
What's the band's name and what's the album's name?
Modridge. That's Modridge. The mm-hmm. album's name is Premier Modridge.
Okay.
Which Will really cruelly called a first thought, best thought. Name
oh, no.
Just out of nowhere, like yeah, just yeah, like woof. He was doing a bit, and then just like, what an asshole. Anywho, this is in this game you play as Diddy Kong and his girlfriend Dixie Kong. So she's
really
from the
retrograde.
South.
Retrograde, yeah,
yeah. She's from the South. As they explore Crocodile Isle in order to rescue Donkey Kong from Captain K. Rool, which is also a pun.
Fucking Rare, man.
there's a lot of this is gonna be a funny episode because like when we get into the bits and pieces, I don't know how to describe levels and that easily.
Yeah,
and there are a lot of them. But in terms of generality, this has pulled me in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good that we cover this eventually because the Donkey Kong Country as a series is considered to be like the standout 2D platformer on the SNES by many people, considered like a top five game on the SNES generally.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd never done it.
Nope.
We've been doing this forever and we've never done it.
I mean, I played both these games as a kid. Like I never had them, mm-hmm. but like I played all of them at friends' houses. Like I recognized all the levels that I played, and they're pretty distinct, you know? So I played it. It's just not a series that blows my hair back really, because like the thing that stands out about it to a lot of people is the visuals. And that's not that has never especially motivated me.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. We'll get into it. I'd only played the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never played this one. And that set me up for the Gary clapback of you got to play the good one,
mm-hmm.
which happens whenever I don't like something.
Yeah,
you know, not trying to call two people out too much, but that always happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we, you know, this is a 2D platformer, and the thing I will give it is this does feel right.
Yeah,
I feel like in terms of how you move around. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like my character, you know, responsive. Like it turns me into a GamePro magazine. Mm-hmm. Like controls were tight. responsive,
yeah,
you know, satisfying jump
handles well, like 0 to 60 in basically an instant,
yeah, get you there and back, you know, get you from point A to point B, you know, did all of those things. So like in that way, I think I understand why people really like it. Mm-hmm. I have quibbles a little bit, not only with the graphics, which we'll talk about and how that impacts the play, but also some of the level design, and we'll get to that. All the level design, just some of it. Mm-hmm. One of the weirdest moves in this is that your character's control basically the same, except for one huge difference.
Yep.
They run a jump, they have a basic attack, and they can pick up and throw things and pick up and throw each other. Mm-hmm. But the manual in the internet tells me Diddy Kong is faster. I did not really notice this, and there's not a reason to go fast in this game.
No.
And Dixie Kong can jump higher and has a hover jump. Mm-hmm. By whipping her ponytail around in a way that like would give her very bad neck injuries.
Yeah.
I cannot... Like, it just felt like the levels and the games were designed for Dixie Kong.
Yeah.
To me, I'm not a fan of Dixie Kong aesthetically or her politics. Like, I don't like that she was way, 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 you know, into the South during that. And, like, it's weird that she keeps bringing it up. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'd play as her because she could hover.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I play as the character who can hover?
Yeah, no, but Dixie feels like a power-up. Yeah, is what she does, and
it's
like,
a weird choice.
It's not presented that way. It's not like, oh, they're like, you get Dixie. You can play as either of them, and very little is communicated as to whether or not she's even necessary for a particular run of run of things. She's necessary to get to particular like bonus stuff.
Yeah,
but like the difference aside from the slow descent, which lets you cover longer distances,
is my thing. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like the higher jump is like not especially noticeable, but it's still material.
Yeah, right? We're the comparison would be Super Mario Brothers 2, you know, Doki Doki Super Mario Brothers 2, but the differences aren't that extreme. Like, other than the float, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is not a Luigi and a Mario jump.
Yeah.
Diddy does a cartwheel that speeds him up a lot, and he hurts enemies. And he uses, there's a really long jump he can do that kind of utilizes coyote time.
Yeah.
In a way that I found, I didn't pull off except for on accident. And then when I was watching some stuff to review, I was like, oh, the person was doing it constantly. And I was like, did this game teach me how to do this? And I missed it.
No, no, it does not. There's a level near the end that requires it.
Yeah.
And nothing has told, you know, nothing has communicated, because this is basically a wordless game. There are like pro tips you can buy.
Yeah,
and there where maybe it is
that
it
could
is
be the case.
Maybe but it's in the manual. That is
they tie into the collectathon economy of this that I'm not going to get in. I didn't get into.
Not a motivator.
Yeah, not a motivator for me. Dixie just has a regular spin attack, and you can swap between characters whenever you like. And they're kind of also a one up, or not one up, a super mushroom. If you get hit, the Kong you're controlling runs away, and then they get stuck in a barrel. Mm-hmm. Donkey Kong, and you bust that open. So you get basically at one free hit per level, but when you get hit, your capabilities are, you know, lessened.
Yes.
Through this, you know, so you get hit as Dixie, you have to spend some time in the Diddy mines, mm-hmm. not the one from the court case, and wait a while until you can find a barrel.
Yes. I think that this is a super interesting way to handle it. It does bring a certain amount of strategy to who you want to bring to what. It calls to mind the Teenage Mutant Ninja sure. Turtles game for NES.
Actually, a lot of them. There's a couple of the Game Boy ones work that way too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you want to save Donatello. You need to have Donatello because of his range, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. I like this, you mm-hmm. know, so far. And you get checkpoints. There's a mid-level checkpoint in every level. The levels are surprisingly long to me, based on like 2D platformers, but that's all here and there. And we'll get to kind of the other gameplay stuff before we get into how it plays and how the graphics intersects this. Mm-hmm. You have Anna Pals. And I feel like the Annapels are meant to be a power-up, but I hated being them every time. They just were a hard part of the game, except for the Rhino.
Yeah,
the Rhino is the fish. the fish, your rhino's kind of an invincibility star. The fish is fine. Mm-hmm. The other ones were like, hey, it's hard to control for a while.
we're gonna ask a lot of things of you that are not clearly communicated about these things' capabilities.
Yes.
God, that fucking snake, Rattly the snake.
I hate the snake.
We'll talk about all of them and kind of their featured levels.
Yes.
The snake almost exclusively appears in very time sensitive situations in his super jump. It is not really communicated when it will activate.
Yeah, it's kind of like you have the trampoline thing from Super Mario Brothers 1 just attached to your feet almost. Mm-hmm. The levels do have a gimmick to them generally. Mm-hmm. The bosses do as well. The bosses are, you know, good pattern recognition bosses. You're mm-hmm. good 16-bit bosses.
Yeah. Even though most of them are avoid stuff and wait until something drops that you can damage them with.
Yeah. But there's little wrinkles in that sometimes.
Yeah.
Like it's good. Mm-hmm. I like the bosses in this.
It's something that only stuck out to me on review in making the notes, like going back and looking at my screenshots and stuff, which was like, oh yeah, no, like all of these are kind of that. In the moment, it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, feels good. Like it's fun to get to a boss.
Yes.
And several, not all, but several of the level gimmicks are actually pretty good and fun.
Yeah.
Like it is it is contrary to my heart to admit that this is a good video game, just not to my taste.
Yeah.
Just not my favorite thing, but mm-hmm. it's good. Like, this is obviously a good game. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of hidden bonus stages inside levels and tons of different kinds of coins, Kong crypto. Mm-hmm. And you use this to unlock content and hints and such. Mm-hmm. You use it to save your game.
Yep.
Which, you know, I got the Switch Online, so get fucked, economy. But they originally, you know, you get to save once for free.
Yeah.
And then you had to pay to do it.
Yeah. You save once for free. I think the more you save, the more expensive it gets.
It is. And this is like a collectathon kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There are some bonus levels and stuff you'll go to. Like there are secrets that are not simply, you know, extra coins or extra crypto. Mm-hmm. But generally, they're like a bonus area in which you get more of those things. You might do a cool gameplay thing to get them. Mm-hmm. You're not unlocking new parts of the map and such. At least in my experience of this. I did not 100% this, and it wasn't a childhood game, so I didn't have that experience with that.
Didn't have the knowledge. It's neat, like looking for secrets within the levels, because this is kind of designed like a Sonic game, where you want to be like the ideal play is to like understand that you can get through everything like basically without stopping. And so like that's one mode of playing. So it's like, okay, you play to learn the level, play to kind of understand how to like speed run it, even though they didn't have the speed run terminology at the time, and then play to find the secrets that are kind of hidden around. Speed run
terminology at the time, Doom and stuff has started.
Okay, sorry. I didn't realize that was that.
I will stand for no PC game erasure on our podcast.
I'm not erasing. I did not know that they used the term. I know that there were time, like, you know, there were the time challenges, but
it's set up to speedrun.
Yes.
Neither here nor there. The I found this game hard to play in a Sonic speedrun Twitch way because of the level design, but I also find Sonic difficult that way. Mm-hmm. That as a gameplay mode for a platformer, like this is really interesting end of the month because we have this and Castlevania, really different kind of philosophies of platformers. Mm-hmm. And it's something I'm realizing is that the go slowly through a level to kind of learn it and then go through it quickly mm-hmm. is not very compelling to me.
Yeah.
In terms of like a reason to play a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's performance, but it's not expression.
Performance, not expression. It's also an inherent repetition. Mm-hmm. And I think that the thing this does have in common with Sonic, I think this does have some stuff in common with Sonic, is, I mean, I may as well talk about it here, is some level design kind of ticks in this that I find frustrating. Mm-hmm. They're not bad design. They are things, though, that are meant to gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are a lot of them. Mm-hmm. So these are, you know, there's no real way around it. Like trial and error gets a really bad name. It's not always bad. Mm-hmm. This is a thing where you do this, you can do a little bit, and it has a little trick that maybe you could react to in time, maybe, you know, but it's difficult. Mm-hmm. And then you just know the next time it's there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always prefer when I'm playing a video game to sight read it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do it and fail and then figure it out. I don't think that's very fun.
No.
For me, I want to be able to do it in the moment. It's exciting to me in the moment. It's not exciting to me, or, you know, and even if I'm doing it slow. in the moment. That's exciting. But it's not exciting to me to get killed or get hit and then just know a thing is there next time, like Battletoad shit.
Yeah, I don't want to shuttle run this.
No. And there's a lot of level design in this that's like that. Not all of it, but there's a lot of it like that. More than you probably remember. Like,
yeah.
Once I noticed it, I was on the lookout for it. And it's about halfway through the game, it's every level has at least one example, if not more, of that stuff.
Yeah. A lot of a lot of vultures dive bombing to edge guard platforms. Yep. Right.
Things like that. Or like just at the edge of the screen. And then when you dodge a vulture, there's another one set up to be directly where you're going to dodge. Yeah, or behind you. And like, I understand that from a level design perspective. Like, oh, cool, gotcha. You know, you want to keep people on your toes. And one of the things about this game is it's challenging. Like, it was sold as such, and it is known as such. That is just not that interesting of a challenge to me. Like, once I know it, I can just get through it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I guess the challenge then is managing your crypto in order to save enough to get through it. But I'm playing this in 2026, so I'm not doing that.
Yeah. And really what I'm doing is using the Switch Online's rewind feature.
Yes.
To be like, oh, well, that was, I could play through the level again. But like, I don't know, my attention is such that I'm not going to hold that vulture was on that particular ledge. By the time I get there, I'm going to die at that point again. And it's just a bunch of repetition.
I probably would when I was a kid, when I beat the speeder bike in Battletoads. Like, this is a rare thing.
Yes.
Rare the game studio likes this. And it just, Gary, the non-game studio doesn't. You know, as a thing. I'm not going to do that. I try not to abuse the rewind. In this, I try to set myself, you know, reasonable checkpoints or just, you know, use it to not have to spend crypto on continues. And then at some point, I ended up utilizing the rewind more because I kept getting annoyed at this shit happening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of all over the place. And it, like after the first set of stages, it does start getting wild.
Yeah. The world map is broken up into sets of stages. These are on separate map screens with their own little biomes and themes. Think Super Mario World through this. But you're not opening up secrets during this. You're opening up secrets within the level to find secrets and making your way through the level. Sometimes there is a way to skip a level. You go past a strong man. If you have the right amount and the right number of crypto, you can get past the strong man.
Yes. Who can also launch you into the secret world stuff that we'll talk about after the main game, which I did not play.
No, I didn't either.
But is the way to get the genocidal ending of this.
Yes. The genocide ending, yeah. Where you kill the entire family.
Yeah.
The Kongs, despite this being enemy territory, have set up a series of niche businesses.
There's a whole education system on Crocodile Isle.
Like, you think about going behind enemy lines and setting up like a barracks, but they set up a college.
Yeah, yeah. It's cultural victory.
Tribulation Forces shit. you get the Monkey Museum. This is run by Cranky Kong, who's an old man and is the original Donkey Kong from the one we all know and love.
He's the leader.
He's the leader. He learned to talk. His wife runs a college. His wife is named Wrinkly Kong, which is really mean.
Extremely mean. And also, like, not actually named for that as a baby?
When a baby is wrinkly, but you have a long stretch between baby and old where you're not wrinkly.
Yeah.
Smooth Kong.
At both of these places, you can buy little tips. You know, like the trick for the boss, or like secret locations, things like that. But at the Kong College, I don't think any of us expected us to say that. You can save. That is where you do your saving.
Yes. There's Swanky's Bonus Bonanza, where Swanky Kong lives. This is a quiz show to get crypto. And these are questions about the game itself. Like, what is the first enemy you run into? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I stopped doing these pretty quick.
Yeah.
And then Funky's Flights, which is kind of a fast travel. Yeah. I would not trust Funky Kong to be my pilot.
No.
Yeah.
Doesn't inspire a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the strong man we're talking about is Clubba. He's got his own kiosk and you spend the creme coins, in order to go to the ultra hard bonus stages, which I did not do.
I want to talk about the alliteration, Gary.
Yeah, they love the letter K, which is there's aspects of that.
Dixie Kong loves it.
Yeah, Dixie Kong fucking loves three of them. Three specific Ks. Dixie Kong is a grand high arch cyclops or whatever. like a power naga in the order.
This is
it's a matter, it's a taste thing. Mm-hmm. Right. But also it makes this game really hard to talk about because everything is alliterative. It just slides off of me because an alliterative name on its own, among other non-alliterative things, will mm-hmm. kind of stand out. When everything is alliteration, it is just sludge.
There's a sludge factor to this that is fucking incredible to me. The idea of caring about this family and these places and these characters any perspective is very difficult for me.
The kids have hungered for lore for a very long time, Gary.
I understand. People were like, oh yeah, this character's great. Funky Kong is super funny. And like, I don't get it. I don't care about this family. I don't care. K. Rool? Give mm-hmm. me a fucking break. He's just like a alligator who walks back and forth with a big gut. Uh-huh. There's no nothing. Mm-hmm. He's not kidnapping people. He's not doing anything. Fucking, you had all summer to figure out what you do, Donkey Kong lore. And all they did was make a big extended family. It's like the first part of the Bible where all there is beginning. Like somebody sat down and made a family tree of them all. And it's like, I don't know, fight a fucking crocodile. Monkeys fight crocodiles. And then just said, ship it. I don't understand why this is the lore of this.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah. I want to talk about the visuals impact the play.
Yes.
Here, this is my problem with the visuals. Visuals are taste. This is something that kind of looks a little bit 3D. Mm-hmm. This is the same way that Super Mario RPG looks. There are many games that look like this. In a platformer, in a 2D platformer, I want pixel precision.
Yes.
I would like the visual representation of the thing to accurately depict its hitbox.
Yes.
That doesn't happen here.
Nope.
There are edges to each platform where it's kind of foreshortened, as opposed to being a rectangle you view from the side. It's kind of a trapezoid. Mm-hmm. You view it at an angle because it's 3D, and the edge of that is not always solid.
No.
They make up for this in Coyote Time, but you have to know that's happening. You cannot really intuit it. Mm-hmm. This I find to be a detriment to platforming. I'm worse at platforming in games that do this style.
Yeah. Mix that in with the explicit trial and error stuff in yes. addition to the trying to understand what the tolerances are around all of these pseudo 3D object does lead to to several situations I would say throughout your entire first playthrough of this where you will die for what feels like is not your fault,
even down to silly things like there's parts where you have to grab onto hooks in the air and you will just snap to grid from bizarre ass angles mm-hmm. of this. You don't have to get as close to it as you think, but that has an impact. You look at it, you're like, I know my jump. I've been playing this for a few hours. Mm-hmm. I can't reach that. I must find a different way, or I have to figure out a special way to get here, or I have to throw one of my companions at it or something.
Yeah.
No, you just get within an inch of it and you'll just snap to grid.
Yeah.
Just make it fucking work. Mm-hmm. And this kind of suffer for fashion shit drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Whenever this comes up in games, this is mm-hmm. a different articulation of when something is very over animated. Yeah, we talk about that in After Suffering a lot.
This is also over animated.
This is over animated.
to the point where they're that does introduce extra slop into the movement.
Yeah.
Into just the overall feeling of momentum or implied momentum.
Yeah. It's not over animated Family Dog is over animated, but it is over animated for Wayne's World.
Yeah.
It's in the same ballpark as that problem. It just does it better and has better level design, general feel and stuff mm-hmm. while also being a little compromised.
Yeah.
And then aesthetically, I find the art direction of this repulsive. Mm-hmm. All of these enemies look like shit. They look like dumb, cartoons with googly eyes walking back and forth. And that's just Rare's thing. Mm-hmm. The Banjo-Kazooie, everything in that game is just an animal with googly eyes.
Yeah.
If you can imagine an animal with googly eyes, you can imagine this company's entire aesthetic. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's their whole thing, and it probably would have been cute in more rudimentary 2D style. But in this, no, the art direction is whatever. I can kind of wireframe a lot of this eventually because you have to if you're gonna be.
Well, I did too because I beat it. I had to do that. But if I think about in terms of gaining affection, mm-hmm. I think about the joy of a Goomba.
Yeah.
It's just a simple iconic enemy. There's nothing in this I would consider to be iconic and a joy to see. Mm-hmm. If in future games they bring back Shy Guys, I'm like, fuck yes. That's mm-hmm. cool. I like that guy. In future games, if they bring back a different kind of strong alligator that walks back and forth, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, they don't even look like they're looking at anything. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why you would design something visually this way.
Yeah. This is in addition to like just like limitations of the way that this of the rendering, right? Mm-hmm. Where they will render a 3D model and they will turn that into sprites and use those sprites to kind of animate things. When you do that, you introduce compression and like dithering and weird like color banding mm-hmm. because of the 16-bit color palette limitations. Just like you're on the SNES, you're not taking advantage of any kind of like directionality of light. Everything is just kind of presented from this like you kind of view from everywhere, and that compression to me like strips all of these models of any pertinent detail that would make them, you know, look good or look like they were actually like designed, and also strips away any detail that you might like look at in their walk cycle, you know, to gauge your like distance to them.
Yeah.
Everything just kind of ends up looking muddy. And this was also a problem for me, you know, not because people will say, oh, it's just because the modern displays, et cetera, et cetera. This was also a problem back in the, like back in the day. I don't think you can separate the, like the technology from the design, the art direction principles from the effect that it has on play. I think it is kind of like a pervasive kind of Vaseline, that just kind of makes everything to me really, really unpleasant to touch in this.
It's also, I think that we're not under an impetus to separate out that from the play because that was such a selling point for this.
Yeah.
It's such a pillar of its reputation that like, not only can you not do that, like if it didn't have that, who knows if this would have worked, if it would have been a huge success.
Yeah.
You know, because this was a big draw and I'm willing to recognize like I'm an outlier in that. This is a very popular game. People like the way it looks.
Yeah.
You know, no accounting for taste, you know, that's fine. But in terms of like art design, not just the style, in terms of how it impacts play, it did impact it for the worse for me, probably because I didn't have kid antibodies. And when I think back to when I was a kid, I did not have the vocabulary to describe why this didn't work for me, but it didn't. Mm-hmm. Like there's a reason why I played Super Mario World like 40 times and I played Donkey Kong Country once and then didn't get the sequel.
Yeah.
And I would have played fucking everything. Like I beat Arrow the Acrobat. I beat Harley's Humongous Adventure. Mm-hmm. Like I beat a bunch of bullshit and I didn't pick up this series.
Yeah. It and also just like I find it philosophical. I disagree with it philosophically. I was about to call it repugnant, but I'm not going to call it repugnant. It is just if you set graphics against play, I do not find choosing graphics, even if it makes it, you know, marketable. And you also like can't discount the time period of the release. The SNES, like this whole generation was nearing its end. It was long in the tooth. Like this came out literally in 1995, the year the PlayStation came out. Yeah. Like the move to 3D was like presaged. People wanted it. There was kind of like built up demand for games to look better in this new way. And I think that this is not the start, because obviously this is happening on, you know, PCs and stuff. But like this was the start of like that. See, you know, I can accommodate you. I can ameliorate you.
Thank you. Love to be ameliorated in my natural habitat.
Yeah. This is a big step down a long path that I don't like the end of. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you in terms of that. One thing that you cannot, that's impeccable is the music.
Yeah.
David Wise, you know, secretly should be up there with Koji Kondo. It's like one of the best video game composers of all time. Understood the SNES soundware. This is a big mix of genres. I love hearing his compositions because they have such a different structure to them than a lot of times Japanese games do. Like not pitting Pokemon against each other. I love Koji Kondo. Obviously, I love Hiptonaka. I love those composers, Nobuo Uematsumatsu. But this just sounds different.
Yeah.
And every David Wise soundtrack is incredible. This one, no exception. It's really good.
Yeah. The songs have like movements. Like a lot of the songs that you end up hearing are like combinations of several. mm-hmm. kind of songs. And he's really playing around with like a lot of sounds, right?
Yes.
And like just deciding I want to do this kind of genre and figuring out how to coax out a really, really good version of that from the SNES hardware. It was
like the level, yeah. like, you know,
yeah.
And I would go as far as say, I do think that this game has the definitive water theme in mm-hmm. a very crowded market for retro game water themes.
Yeah.
Like I would consider this to be the definitive one, even edging out the Mario Waltz or the Mario 64. Mm-hmm. Peaceful music.
Yes. Yeah. That Vangelis synth track that you get in the Bramble levels.
Yeah.
Just
love it's really good.
Yeah.
And the soundtrack to this is incredible. Like mm-hmm. no notes.
Yeah. It's pretty weird that it's taken us this long to talk about a Rare game on WAF, given how many games they made, how tall those loom in video game history. I did bring Jetpack to a live show, but that wasn't technically Rare. That was Ultimate Play the Game.
And we've done them on Abject Suffering. The game where we did the episode where we did first did bad games, like the pilot Abject Suffering, we did for that special WAF. Time Lord was on that.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot that was a Rare game. So yes.
Yeah. It might have been an Ultimate Play the Game. I don't mm-hmm. know.
No, it was Rare. That was on the SNES.
Oh, yeah. That's the 90s. Yeah. Because Rare used to be called Ultimate Play the Game. Great title. No notes. Mm-hmm. Founded in 1992 by Tim and Chris Stamper, John Lathbury, and Carol Ward. Yeah. And they did arcade games and British microcomputer games. And eventually they turned into Rare in 1985 to kind of start working on Famicom games.
Yeah. They anticipated that Nintendo's system was going to be a really huge deal. They imported one and then just started like reverse engineering it. Mm-hmm. You cannot take away from Rare that they are technical wizards, and especially in this era.
Their games look like, in every era they're in, at least the 8 and 16-bit, you can tell that a game is a Rare game.
Yes.
You know, they did tons of games. They were very prolific with the SN or the NES, so much so that like a Rare game is not always a mark of quality, but it will be something that looks interesting.
Yeah.
Like they did a bunch of bullshit game shows. And like they even the game shows will have a cool effect on the demo on the select screen or whatever that will happen, even if the game is horseshit.
Yeah.
You know.
Also the music. I mean, like he was more of an 8-bit guy, but Tim Follin, like talk about understanding the hardware. Good lord.
Tim Follin also up there, you know, in terms of these composers and such. And they did like a really wide variety of things, known primarily for like, again, some shovelware and then games that were good, but really challenging.
Yes.
Things like your Battletoads, mm-hmm. you know, and then things like your like Eliminator Boat Duel. Or is that the one? They do one of the ship games where you're a boat cruising around. I think it might be Eliminator Boat Duel. It's one of the speedboat games, mm-hmm. Things like that. They mostly considered sitting out the SNES generation, which they mostly did, except they did a couple Battletoads games. They're supposed mm-hmm. to be better than the NES one. Yep. And invested in Silicon Graphics workstations with the intention of getting ahead of the Nintendo 64.
Yeah. They kind of wanted this first mover advantage on it.
Yes.
And these were really expensive. I think I saw like $80,000 for just one of these things. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the early days of, you know, kind of large-scale 3D graphics projects, right?
Yes.
And, you know, they got these pretty early, and they were just kind of fucking around and figured, oh, we can take renderings of these 3D models and turn them into 2D sprites and use those to kind of fake a 3D effect on the SNES, which by itself could not handle, you know, it required special chips to even get, like, rudimentary Star Fox
stuff. Yeah, to get Star Fox stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so they used this technique. They pitched a pseudo-3D boxing game to Nintendo, and Nintendo was like, this fucking rules, here's a blank check. And they eventually became like a subsidiary of Nintendo. They bought 25% stake in the company, not quite a subsidiary, but basically they would do some stuff for Xbox, but like it's would become like a second party developer.
Yeah. Second party developer for Nintendo up through the 90s, part of the 2000s, the Xbox stuff that they did was part of an acquisition. Microsoft fucking poached them.
Yeah.
Is what they
up
did.
Until that point though, they were purely Nintendo.
Yes. So like they had pitched them, Nintendo was really excited about it, and it is unclear how Rare ended up getting Donkey Kong. Some stories have them saying like, oh, we love Donkey Kong, we want to take a crack at this. Other stories have Nintendo saying, hey, take Donkey Kong because we really screwed the pooch with Donkey Kong 3.
I have no idea what to do with this. There's exterminators now and bugs. We kind of lost it.
Listen, we did an Abject Suffering about Donkey Kong 3 recently. Yeah. It's not a bad game. It's just weird. But they're like, oh, Donkey Kong, it'd be low risk if this is a botched revival. Right. Yeah. Others were like Nintendo gave them a menu of stuff to work with. Regardless, they ended up picking up Donkey Kong and saying, we can work with this.
I love that menu of stuff because like the things that were dormant, it was either going to be this or Kid Icarus. We all know it.
Rare picking up Kid Icarus, like that is a whole other path.
It's really interesting alternate history.
And they seem doesn't it seem like Rare would have picked up Kid Icarus? Like Kid Icarus has such Rare energy already, kind of.
We will, there's like a Philip K. Dick novel about what if they did that. The team's mission for Donkey Kong Country was to elaborate on Super Mario Bros. 3, developing levels that could be completed in a fast and fluid way if the person knew how.
Yeah.
Something that I feel like they changed from this is that Super Mario Bros. 3 levels are 10 seconds long.
Yes.
That was the big thing I noticed when revisiting it. And even Super Mario World levels are significantly shorter than these levels. Mm-hmm. So if the idea is you practice them and that you're good at them, it is a much longer practice cycle.
Yeah.
Which I do think is to its detriment as that kind of game.
Yeah. Like looking at videos of the stages to kind of refresh myself if I was unclear, the fluid playthrough to like, get the collectibles to get out of there, two, three minutes. And that's somebody who knows exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. And, Super Mario Bros. 3 level would be less than 30 seconds almost with that if you're just sprinting.
This was a massive success, the first Donkey Kong Country was. And you cannot discount the role that the graphics played in that, but also the graphics being showcased. The marketing for this was fucking everywhere. Yeah. Holy shit. If you're of a certain age, you will remember the Nintendo Power VHS tape, Donkey Kong Country Exposed.
Yeah, they got Laurel on it. When I think back to my younger self who did not have a critical mind at all, why this didn't work for me, it's even more I feel like I knew on some level the things I know now, because I even resisted this marketing push. Mm-hmm. And I went out in the street and yelled Mortal Kombat. Like, I was not good at resisting marketing pushes.
Yeah.
A VHS tape was a fucking sniper bullet that should have done me in.
I remember really, really excited for it, being into it. It felt like this Super Mario RPG came like a little bit later. But like, I think that might be an age difference thing too. Because, you were 14 when this came out. I was 7. Right. Yeah. So like, I remember like sitting over like at my step grandparents' house with like my cousins, like watching this tape and like following it and being like super impressed. Like, oh, here are like the wireframes for these models. Look at what you're going to get to play as. This is the future. Right.
Yeah, tech demo kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Development on Donkey Kong Country 2 began before Rare even knew whether the first one was a success or not. There are a few ideas that were left on the cutting room floor from the first game, and the team was excited to pitch these new ones. Here they basically used all their stuff and they're like, what can we do instead? And they want to make this more demanding than the first game, which they did. Tighten up the platforming on level 3 and give the people who experienced the first game more to chew on. This is a difficulty escalation from the first game, basically. Which is an interesting way to do it.
That was a complaint about the first game, was that it was a little bit too easy, except for the minecart levels, which were fucking nightmares.
This also has some of those, like, it's manageable, except for some levels where it's like, fuck this shit.
Yeah.
And they got rid of Donkey Kong as a playable character. In part of it, because they figured they could. Also, people did not like playing as Donkey Kong that much in the first one, because he was slower and had a bigger hitbox.
Yeah.
Similar to the first game, there was no advantage to playing him. Them doing these kind of asymmetric characters as difficulty select was something they liked doing.
Yes. Yeah. And they could, by adding Dixie, they could do some new ideas. Right.
Yeah.
We want somebody who will play differently. Nintendo apparently put the kibosh in them bringing Candy Kong and promoting her and making her playable because of how sexualized she was. Yeah,
Candy Kong is exceedingly sexualized. It was very funny playing this, and Liv was looking over my shoulder and her just being like, that one's girlfriend?
Uh-huh.
What do they do? Like, what is the family here? Like, just not, you know, just the idea of Donkey Kong having a family just being very confusing. I'm like, no, that's his girlfriend. Presumably she comes from another family.
Yeah,
same and she's last like, name. No, it looks like her sister. They same last name. And I'm like, well, yeah. they are related, I guess. I don't know. They were ahead of their time. It's a step Kong, and it's the most popular search result on Porn Kong. Like Kong Hub.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Step Kong walks in on Step Kong.
And Donkey Kong Country 2, another huge success.
Yes.
You know, this is the high point of the 2D series. They made their plan and they executed on it very well.
There's a third one that came out even later that's even more ambitious that has like introduces Dimwit Kong or something, like some Kong cousin who's a dope.
Oh, yeah. No, it's kind of a baby Huey kind of situation. Yeah.
It's kind of an adult child Kong.
Kitty Kong is who it is. That one's not considered to be very good.
No, people don't like it.
Yeah, even by the I never played that one because even by that point I've kind of like fallen off. They were in the middle of developing. Rare was in the middle of developing a Virtual Boy port of this, but that was canceled because the Virtual Boy was a failure. The first Donkey Kong was ported to the Game Boy Color. This one was not, but it was eventually brought to the Game Boy Advance with, you know, some of those like Super Mario Advance style kind of additions to it.
Yeah, and those have good reps, good reputations.
Yeah,
there's a bootleg called Super Donkey Kong 2. As made by Chinese developers, that has four levels of this, and they're in the Famicom, so that's kind of fun.
Apparently, it's pretty good. Like I meant to play it, but I couldn't find the ROM very easily. Watched a video of it. Like it actually looks like snappier than this because of the limited animation. Yeah,
it would be on the Famicom with 8-bit graphics. Everything would be good. Yeah. Rare went on to have this kind of second heyday in the N64 era. You know, again, second party developer, putting out a lot of games that people really liked, including the hated Donkey Kong 64, one of my least favorite games that I attempted to play.
Yeah, I was fortunately spared from that because that was an expansion pack game, and I didn't get my expansion pack until Majora's Mask.
Yeah, so miserable game.
As we mentioned before, Rare was bought away by Microsoft to make games for the Xbox in 2002. They went from Star Fox Adventures to Grabbed by the Ghoulies, and they have been under Microsoft's thumb to this day when they have been making Sea of Thieves content for nearly a decade.
Yeah, a duet of triumphs between Star Fox Adventures and Grabbed by the Ghoulies. Donkey Kong Country label be picked up by Retro Studios. In 2010's Wii game, Donkey Kong Country Returns, 2014's Wii U game, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. That is real Christmas Ape Goes to Summer Camp shit.
yeah, you're right.
And people really like the latter one. Like, people like those new ones. And people like the new Donkey Kong game that's the 3D platformer.
The Bonanza, the Super Mario Odyssey sequel.
Yeah, I'm pretty curious about that, too. Like, that looks fun through there. I think that I did not necessarily dislike Donkey Kong. I just disliked Rare. Even then, I can admit this is good, just not for me, as we said.
Yeah. And I hope people come away with that this is at least, you know, respectable, even if we are grudging about it.
It's a thing where, like, it is difficult. The only thing we can do in this situation, because there's no such thing as objective criticism, is recognize the thing this does well, but then say, you know, we didn't like it and figure out why. You know, or we didn't like it as much as we should. This isn't like pulling teeth. Like, there are moments of fun in this for sure. Really, like, anytime I was in a barrel, those levels in the first one people don't like. In this, I love that. Switch up gameplay mode, it was precise. Like, it was, these aim in 8 directions, basically. Like, that felt like I had more control than I ever did when I was outside of the barrel. Put me in the barrel. Just way into being in the barrel.
Okay, Drew Sharp.
Yeah.
That's right. He liked it.
Yeah. He asked for it. Mr. White, he wanted to be in there, Mr. White.
He wanted to be with his bike forever.
Yeah, he wanted to be with his bike forever, Mr. White. I don't understand why it's a problem, Mr. White. So we're going to get into it. We're standard platforming on WAF rules where it is difficult to just say, like, and then you jump on this platform. So we're going to say the new things that happen. And kind of scoot through these pretty quick.
Because ultimately, these levels are their gimmicks.
Right? Yes. with space in between the gimmicks.
First kind of biome is Gangplank Galleon. Everything here has a kind of a pirate theme to it, because I guess King K. Rool becomes Captain K. Rool when he's here. Yeah. They call it an alter ego.
Yeah, it's a field promotion.
He's like Don Cheadle in Boogie Nights, right?
Yeah.
One year he's a cowboy, the next year he's a spaceman, right?
Yeah. We start with Pirate Panic. Get used to alliteration. And this is just really basic. Little rats come at us. There are crocodiles and barrels who bump you. Mm-hmm. These ones are made to frustrate you. Once they hit you, if you jump immediately, they will run under you.
Yeah.
You have to wait a second to jump. Mm-hmm. This is the very first instance of the game being like, this is the thing that's intuitive. It won't work.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens in 1-1.
Yeah. And then you have basic peg leg crocs, which are not terribly different from the rat enemies.
No, they're just taller. And they just walk back and forth with an idiot look in their eyes. Like, they're presumably sentient, but they're not doing anything.
Yeah, yeah. There's a howling void inside them.
They've been babbled. We get Rombi the Rhombus, the rhinoceros here, who is basically invincibility. If he runs into guys, he'll hit him. Mm-hmm. And he can also jump and bounce on shit.
Yeah, and get in barrels weirdly later
on.
The ontology of these animal friends is really funny to like think about, but B, like, hear them talk about. There's some real Wikipedia said it best on this, which is like them arguing about whether it's unsatisfying that at points the monkeys will transform into the shitty animal friends, and just like, well, if a parrot was carrying two monkeys, it wouldn't be very maneuverable.
I kept thinking about whether these different animals also have like kingdoms and jobs, because like the monkeys are a thing and the crocodiles are a thing, but you know, what are the rhinoceroses? Does he come from like a culture, or is he like a pack animal?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, is it one of those animals have degrees of sentience?
It's Pluto versus Goofy kind of deal. Yeah,
yeah. Like, he seems intelligent, and you can turn into him, and you can make choices as him. But
yeah, very capable.
I filled out a living will. this brings us into Main Brace Mayhem, and this takes place in the rigging. Something I really love is that the rope climbing is the same as Donkey Kong Jr., which is you climb up quicker with two hands, but you're more vulnerable.
That's really neat, and that's something that I didn't have an appreciation of when I was a kid.
I love it. I'm a big Donkey Kong Jr. defender, and I was very happy to see that.
Yeah, coming back to it now, I was just like, oh, that's actually really like kind of sweet, actually.
Yeah, it's quaint. Like, oh, you did your homework. You know, a lot of people don't like Donkey Kong Jr., but you guys are at least doing a shout out and picking a cool idea from it.
Yes. You get beetle enemies here who are kind of like the Goombas in Super Mario World. You can hop on them and it knocks them upside down and you can throw them. Mm-hmm. But it takes a couple of hops if you're just trying to kill them normally.
Yeah. Gangplank Gallery. Which is, I guess, is from Gangplank Galleon. It's like the first level, but we have angry crocs. These ones, you hit them, they turn red.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you hurt it, if you jump on them again, they hurt you.
Yeah.
Nothing visually changes other than them being red. Mm-hmm. They don't do anything except still just walk back and forth.
Yeah.
But their heads now hurt you.
How's that work with your color vision limitations?
Oh, I mean, they look red. They look different very least. Yeah. I just don't understand. Like, usually when something hurts you and you jump on it, it has spikes.
Mm-hmm.
Or something that would do it. They just decided not to.
Yeah. No. Very counterintuitive to me. Yeah. I would always forget that this was how these guys worked.
And it also ended up being a thing where it just like, why even do anything with them? Like, I just jump over everything and float past it because there's no advantage to fighting them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can use them that it bounced to get a secret or some bananas, which are, you know, coins in this, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this brings us to our first underwater stage. One thing I will say for this is the underwater controls are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Lockjaw's locker. The other thing I'll say that I think is cool is that when there are animal friends in a level, they are not necessary. Mm-hmm. I would play a level sometimes, be swimming as my monkey, and then get to a sign that says, hey, no swordfish. And I was like, what odd thing to put up a sign for? I wasn't planning on bringing a swordfish in here. But that implied to me that I could have found the swordfish if I had gone through it. I found him here because it's the intro, but there are later swordfish or spider signs I saw. They're like, no spiders. And I was like,
yeah. And I was like, what an odd thing to say. I never even saw that barrel. Like, that must have been pretty well hidden, actually. Yeah. That is a neat way to signpost that there's stuff that you can miss, is to literally signpost it, I realize, dumbly. I already said the word.
Yeah. No, it's good. And it feels good to swim in this. The swimming is pretty good. And the music is, again, impeccable.
Yeah. On Guard the Swordfish is a meaningful upgrade. And that's like, you don't have to do like the flappy controls with it.
Yes.
You just kind of move. Topsail Trouble, you're up in the rigging again. It's our first Rattly the Rattlesnake level. Fucking hate this thing.
He's so really bad. Annoying. It just turned you into a pogo stick, basically. Yeah. Like, you have some control over how high you jump, but you can just jump really high. Is the thing you can do here. And there is a level of zoom to this game that makes me not like this.
Yeah.
It's generally appropriate. Like, I would have preferred the sprites to be a little smaller and a little bit more zoomed out to see more screen real estate. Yeah. But I really noticed it on Rattly the Rattlesnake.
Yeah.
You know, because there are kind of leaps of faith that happen with this.
Oh, like, especially up and down. Like, you're already going against the aspect ratio of the screen with that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Rattly has like a super jump that you can charge. He just like starts wiggling faster as you hold it. And it is not clearly communicated when you will fire off when you have charged it up enough.
Yeah.
Is the deal. Fucking hate Rattly.
Yeah, Rattly sucks. All my homies hate Rattly.
Yeah.
There are hornet enemies introduced in this as well.
These things fucking scared me as a kid, Gary. I hate these hornets. I hate the beehive levels.
They are comparatively the size of like one third of a gorilla.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a pretty big hornet.
They're also like big and spiky, and they look really waxy.
They do look. Everything in this game looks waxy, but these look especially waxy.
Especially these things. Yeah, no, they really highlight the chitin on these bad boys. They're mostly environmental challenges. Like, they don't come after you, thankfully.
No, they're spiky things that go back and forth.
Yes,
and there are ones that are you can kill when you have the bird friend, and there are ones that are a different color and you can't. Again, just saying, like, if something's a different color, it's invincible. Yeah. We don't know.
Yeah,
red is invincible. Fuck it.
Yeah, it's the red ones. That's what it means. And the boss here, you get a sense for how different the bosses are compared to the base levels. Crow's Nest, Crow with a K, is this big-headed vulture who throws his eggs at you.
Mm-hmm. It's shockingly negligent. I like that the bosses are all a single level. Mm-hmm. Like, you just go to the boss level, which is nice for iterating. If you're going to fail, this boss is pretty easy here, but eventually they do become more challenging. I like that you can just start them from the beginning. I like that. I do not like the design on Crow. I don't think he looks cool.
No.
But I like throwing his eggs at him and teaching him to be an absentee mother. Her to be an absentee. I don't know. I assume that she's laying the eggs. Mm-hmm. We beat this and we go to Crocodile Cauldron. They can't all be called that, guys. this big volcano that has a destroyed ship caught in it. And we're in Lava Land in this.
Yeah. And we get to a fun level. Like, this is like really kinetic. Hothead Hop. The hotheads are these little crocodiles kind of like sticking out of the water, pitfall style. And when you land on them, they're like springs. They kind of bounce you.
Yeah. This is good. You know, we get to Cannon's Claim, and this is our first kind of mine level, your gem mine level. There are a lot of barrel launches in this. I love those. Sometimes you are just choosing the right one. Sometimes they move, and you're aiming them. They introduce a maze later of them, which I think is like the good articulation. I don't know if you remember the Super Nintendo Lion King game. With that monkey maze that like really sucked. So, you know, this secretly one of the hardest Super Nintendo games of all time for some reason. That monkey maze, I always thought was a good idea, but sucked. It's good here.
Yes.
Like, they fixed it.
Yeah. Where the barrels stop working for me is when it's just like, we want to make the screen move fast. So you hop into them and then it's like autopilot as you go through a bunch of them to cross a lot of distance.
I kind of like that. Like, it's just a little like break. to see some moving. Sonic does that kind of thing too when you go into a launcher sometimes. Like I kind of like I can get into that. Like just taking a break. Through this. And there are cannoneer enemies here. They just shoot at a regular rhythm. Stand there shooting, you jump over their bullets and jump on their heads.
Yeah. You meant to close like distance with them. This is in addition to kind of fancier crocodiles who throw their hook hands out. Like those usually guard vertical distances, like the hook hands act kind of like boomerangs. So you have to like time them. There's a lot of, especially in the barrel timing, a lot of like waiting for things to get slightly out of phase so you can pass them.
Next is Lava Lagoon. This is another water level. It's lava and you can jump on a seal and the seal will spit something into the water that cools it down for a limited time. This is a good gimmick. I had no idea that's what the seal did. Because it's just a seal.
It's just a seal. They don't have that power in nature. It's a Pokemon. Is what this is.
It's a Pokemon. It's a sea eel. It's just there's no like it could have been a penguin that did something with ice. I just there's no semiotics. It's just kind of the random. Everything is an animal with googly eyes. Yeah, it's frustrating. The concept I like of this. You have a limited time to swim. I think is good, and they do cool things with like hiding secrets. You have risk reward things all the time. Like I can go get this 10 pack of bananas, but maybe I won't have enough time to get out. Good level design.
A lot of attracted nuisances down there
in the lava, with like real lava.
Red Hot Ride. Again, it's like hidden fast with these gimmicks that are never explored again, outside of possibly the Lost World levels. This is a lava level like the first one, but a lot of this is passed on these hot air balloons that will rise when they're over hot air vents, but slowly descend. You can like, choose whether they move left or right when you're on top of them, and jump off of them. But it's a lot of like, trying to avoid flying enemies while managing how much height you have. It's like a little timer.
Yeah, I found this tricky. I died a lot on this. It's like Flappy Bird, but with like vents, with like upstreams. And I found this difficult. We get up to Squawk's Shaft, dreadful euphemism, which introduces the rotating barrels, which you have the time, again, I like. And then Squawk the Parrot, who controls like Flappy Bird and spits out eggs. No good parents on this aisle. And I find him Flappy Birding around these things. This one is fine because it's their introduction. Eventually, these levels will be exactly like the Ninja Turtles NES game dam level, where every surface is spiky. You are kind of doing an irritating stick, moving Flappy Bird through it. I did not care for those. Like, they're not all bad, but they do use that. They pull the lever a couple too many times, and I don't think it's that interesting of a lever.
There's also a cool gimmick with a different variant of Squawky Bird later on as well. The boss of this one is good. Cleaver's and Cleaver's Kiln. Cleaver is a sentient pirate cutlass.
Pretty good.
It's like a Super Mario RPG kind of guy, and you have to avoid his slashes until the cannonball falls and you can throw it at him. He has like a good variety of attacks actually, and you have
he has a second phase. Gets faster and does different attacks. It's neat.
And you've got to like avoid him as you cross to the other side of the level on the hooks.
Good level. Through this good boss. This brings us into Creme Quay. Not as good a alliteration there, which is a swamp with shipwrecks in it. So you're noticing a theme. And we go into Barrel Bayou. We have these kind of toxic water pitfalls in this. And this is barrels we can aim ourselves, but we have a limited amount of time. They have a countdown. Before shooting. And then I'm glad you had the wizard coat. If you put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you what these enemies are.
No.
What is trying to be represented by these? There's like they're spellcasters of some kind. They looked a little bit like a wizard coat to me, but like just a floating coat.
Yeah.
I could not tell you what this is meant to represent.
No clue. I don't know. Like it just appears and throws a limited number of things before running away.
Yeah, you can take them out if you get up to them. Like they're not invincible. And they're just every time I saw one of those, I was like, what the fuck is this graphically? I have no idea what this is.
Yeah, no idea what trick they were trying to do. Yeah,
yearning for Kamek. you get Rambi here, and this is where you can learn that rhinoceros go in barrel too.
We get an underwater level with a light gimmick here with Glimmer's Galleon. Glimmer is an anglerfish, just one of the lesser shitty animal friends. It's dark. under the water here. Glimmer will kind of like make a little narrow flashlight cone to illuminate where you're looking, kind of on a slight delay from your turns.
Yeah.
As he follows works, you.
Yeah. Like, yeah, this is good to me. Crockhead Clamber is a swamp level that has little tiny crocs with big swords. These guys, you have to wait, you know, they'll hold their sword kind of up. Mm-hmm. And then once they swing their swords down, you can jump on them.
Yes. They're walking around like capper demons. They've got these two gigantic swords. I like it.
And there are cattails you can climb up and down and jump from, kind of between them. And there are dragonflies in the middle, again, kind of like Flappy Bird.
Yes.
You know, balloon fight kind of stuff. You're not doing the same movement, but you're just going through horizontal obstacles, jumping from vine to vine, basically.
The dragonflies also kind of act like temporary platforms. Like you need this chained bounces off of them as well.
Yeah, something I always like doing in video games. Bouncing off a series of enemies over a pit. Mm-hmm. Always happy to be doing that.
Yeah. Just kind of one of those like 201, not quite elemental game mechanics, but like...
Like an elevator.
Yeah, it's like a really good cornerstone for like an entire game, basically.
Rattle Battle is just a rattly level. You know, it has all the pitfalls that go with that. And then Slime Climb, when you're already at Crockhead Clamber, this is, you have to move upward constantly. It's an auto-scroller. This water level rises. Mm-hmm. Again, we talked about the screen real estate when you're going vertically. It's a little bit more limited. So this is tricky. You know, I died a couple times on this as well. I found this hard.
So much trial and error on these things.
It brings into Bramble Blast with its really good music here. And the brambles are when they have the walls that will hurt you. There are bramble mazes, it spikes. You just have to stay off of the level geometry. You have to search for safe spots to jump onto.
Yes. A lot of like jumping over walls of these spikes that will damage you if you run into them. So like low tolerance platforming here, not just with Dixie. A lot of barrel blasts in this. These are visually surreal. Like you're way up in the sky and these mazes made of spiky vines, which I like.
It's kind of like you're at the end of Outer Wilds. Mm-hmm. Then the boss of this is Cudgel's Contest.
Yes.
Cudgel is a strong crocodile with a big club. And you avoid his swings. He jumps around. TNT barrels will fall down that you can throw at him. Mm-hmm. Again, pretty good boss fight.
Yeah.
You know, you are just waiting for things to come down, but they all have like a dodge phase and then an attack phase. It can be frustrating if you miss the attack phase because you have to sit through an entire other dodge phase. Mm-hmm. Like if you mistime it or something like that. Yeah. But it's still... Like again, these, I think they're well designed generally.
Yeah. He's also really big. And so is his club. So you get kind of like a frost walrus situation going on. Like you need to dodge him, but like getting over him, like you have to commit to a big jump and really understand what the hitbox on him is.
Yeah. And because nothing matters, we're now in Crazy Kremland, which is an amusement park.
Which is
by the volcano.
Partly an amusement park, but also mostly bees.
Yeah, it's a bee-themed mine amusement park.
You know those, classic.
Yeah. And it starts out with the hornet hole. thought they closed that place down.
And this is a beehive level. I don't know if it's just my weird, like, I wouldn't call it like apiarophobia, but like, these bugged me as a kid and still kind of bug me because you see the little compartments with the babies and the babies look at you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I, you know, I would not like to be in a beehive.
No.
I'm not scared of honey, but like, I'm not. You know, I don't want to stand in it. And that's the gimmick here is these tacky surfaces, these honey surfaces. You can't move. You can just jump. Mm-hmm. So they kind of mess up your platforming. You move horizontally and vertically through this. You can also hang onto walls of these, like kind of goo onto walls.
There's a lot of like very tight, almost like Batman NES jumps that you have to do, like to jump higher up on a wall. You just kind of have to like really precisely tie and like arcing out and then like maneuvering back to that wall as you go up.
It's not something that we're covering for the show right now, but it's informing platformer month for me is that I also played through Rystar on the Sega Genesis at the same time, which does a similar thing with its like little grab thing, except it's like a skill-based mechanic. You had to learn the timing of it. It reminded me of flying in Super Mario World rather than Batman wall jumping.
It warms my heart that you like Rystar.
I like it a lot.
I fucking adore that game.
It's good. This is controversial. It feels like good Sonic to me in that, like, it is exploration secret-based level design with multiple paths, but you are not just running into traps everywhere. It's not just you running and then like, oh, there's some spikes at the end of this. Yeah. There are spikes there. Like, it just doesn't do that. The end boss is some bullshit. I don't know if you remember the end boss. That's fucking crazy.
It's pretty rough.
This brings us to our first roller coaster ride level. This is something that Donkey Kong is famous for. This is Target Terror. You ride a mine cart that's made out of a big rodent skull. And you jump over pits and you have to hit green barrels that will open up a little gate in front of you. Red ones will close it. Mm-hmm. This is one of the tricksy level design things. You don't have a whole lot of time to react to these. And it will do two green barrels and then a red barrel to like, gotcha.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that inherently. Like, you can react to it, but just the penalty is like, well, you just fucking died. And next time you just know it's there.
Yeah.
You just memorize the sequence again, speeder bike shit.
Precisely. It's a real skeleton key for Rare. Everything is speeder bike, or many things are speeder bike.
They love that speeder bike.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I beat Battletoads as a kid. There was a time in which I memorized the speeder bike and had a modicum of fun doing it. I'm not immune to that. I just am over it now.
Yeah. I memorized the even less fun speeder bike kind of levels in the Game Boy Battletoads as a kid.
Even harder to do. Bramble Scramble is a Bramble level with Squawk. This is the one that most plays like the dam level from TMNT2 because you're swimming, basically.
Another thing, just the really hammering on the point of the visuals not clearly communicating to you, which is some brambles hurt you, some don't.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
We return with another roller coaster level here, the Rickety Race. This is neat. I think that this is very cute. there is no just straight minecart level. Which is very nice. In this one, there are other cars on the track with you, piloted by little Kremlings, the little crocodile guys, and you have to get past them.
Yeah, and you get points for doing it. Like, jumping on them gives you a little score counter at the top. Counts down. You have to get enough of them for at the end, and you're on a track. So it's basically an auto scroller. You have a limited amount of time to do it. Good level.
Yeah.
Mudhole Marsh is a swamp level with lots of hook platforming. I'm not super into the hook platforming. It's fine.
Yeah.
You get to Rambi Rumble, which is what if a rhinoceros was inside a beehive?
It'd be a fucking nightmare. It's like a horse being loose
there's a horse in the hospital. And then eventually the boss chases you, King Zing, who's a big hornet, and Agent 47 walks up and goes, "Where's the King Sting? Where's the King Zing?" And this is a boss fight you do as Squawk. I do not like this.
No, this is fucking awful.
This takes forever. Yeah. Like, you have to constantly, you're swimming, you have to tap to be above, or to stay in the air. Only his stinger is vulnerable, and he moves really quick.
Mm-hmm.
You have to anticipate him pretty far in advance to be facing the correct direction to hit him in the back.
Yes.
And then he turns red eventually and goes faster. Through this, it's really difficult to be aiming the right direction at his back.
Yes. The stinger is not big compared to his body. He's a really big bee. Also, this is like not visually interesting. Like, it's just, what if we scaled up a bee?
Yeah.
And also, like, imagine trying to avoid shoot 'em up patterns, because when he turns red and shoots out shoots out spikes at angles, imagine trying to do that with Flappy Bird controls.
This is a bummer. I found this to be an irritating boss fight. I do not like Squawk the Bird.
Yeah. Also, ontologically upsetting, when you defeat the big one, he splits into five bees, one of them red. Were they just in, like, were they piloting him in from inside? Is this a Men in Black situation? Yeah.
After you beat him, we go into Gloomy Gulch, which is a haunted forest that's inside the mountain because no geometry matters in this world. And we're introduced to a spooky palette. Basically, Ghostly Grove is a forest platform level, but we have ghost vines that disappear. You get like one hop on them. Yes. So again, they're still introducing new gimmicks, which I appreciate in a platformer.
Yeah.
Good work with that.
Yeah. Even if we have seen every biome pretty much, like the beehive levels are their own distinct thing. The bramble levels are their own distinct thing.
Yeah.
Haunted Hall is, I think, really good.
Yeah, this is neat.
Yeah. So like the first part of this, you're in a haunted house's library, you do some hook platforming, but the majority of the level is another minecart race. But it's like a checkpoint time race. You're kind of like trying to hit these gates with time left. Hitting green barrels will add to your time limit, which is necessary. You can't just get there in the time that they provide, but you're trying to avoid the red ones, which will subtract from it. And if you die, this ghost that is chasing you will run off with your Kong.
Yeah, pretty good. Like, fun level. Mm-hmm. Gusty Glade is a platforming level with wind that goes in two different directions. I understand that platforming people had to do this back in the day before we had more gimmicks. Yeah. I don't think they've ever worked.
No, I never liked them. No, let's just fundamentally change the physics on you.
Leave that in the lost levels.
In an unpredictable way. Yeah.
Yeah. Parachute Pit Panic is a beehive level, but you have a purple squawk who can only descend. Mm-hmm. So something has happened to him.
He's been clipped.
Yeah, he's been clipped. So trickier because of that. And then we're introduced to Squitter the Spider. I don't like saying Squitter. No. We've had bonus stages with this little guy before. Yeah. He creates platforms.
Yes.
And you do this, you know, making these little webs that turn into temporary platforms to make your own platforms to kind of move. You cast these with an upward or downward arc.
Yes.
So you're basically, you know, creating your own platform, chaining these web platforms to make it through over these big pits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, extremely long pits, and the platforms, they stick around for longer than you would think they would, but you do have a limited amount of time to like angle your shots. Also, the projectiles move very slowly on this guy. I do kind of like the aesthetic on Squitter is kind of sicko mode. I like that he is wearing eight like high top sneakers.
It reminds me of the spider guy from the Beetlejuice cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing. Whenever a spider is like a tap dancing spider and has feet with shoes, it's like, okay, you know, you got me. Pretty cool. It's spider wearing shoes.
Right, get over here, you son of a bitch. Yeah,
give your old man a hug. give your old man four hugs. This brings us into the boss, Creepy Crow, who is the ghost of the first crow.
Mm-hmm.
So we are doing something similar again.
My friend Crow died. He fucking died.
The whereabouts of Tom Servo are unknown.
That's good. It's kind of a reprise, except he sends these annoying vulture enemies at you. I say annoying because you encounter them out in the world. These are the edge guarding ones that'll dive bomb you. But most of them are ghosts, but the last one will be solid, and you have to jump on it in order to make an egg fall to throw that at Crow to damage him. Real egg, ghost crow. Yeah, maybe there's a ghost crow inside.
Yeah, maybe. It's just hard to say. Or maybe it's like Death Stranding, and because it's alive, it'll hurt him.
Oh, yeah.
As this goes on, you're kind of doing phases ascending higher and higher as this fight goes on. This brings us to our final canon world, K-Rool's Keep. Here with the first level, Arctic Abyss. This is a long underwater cave maze. It's really big, really long. You can tell that they're kind of doing final exam shit.
Yes.
Here we're doing our hard version of all of the levels we've done so far.
Yes. The wind gimmick comes back for Windy Well. If you hated it horizontally, guess how you're going to feel about it vertically.
It's pretty rough.
Yeah.
Dislike.
Yeah. This is almost, we played a game. This is almost like a low G man.
Sure.
A little bit. Yeah. Where like the wind will blow down until you jump over like a yellow caution line, and then it will start like blowing up. So it, basically, it works like reversing gravity.
Yeah. Yeah. Low T man. Is that a thing? Castle Crush.
That one wasn't released. There's only a beta that leaked.
Yeah. Well, it didn't leak enough, actually. Castle Crush, which is an auto-scrolling level. This rising floor will crush you if you lit it. This is the most Mario feeling level to me.
Yeah.
That's a very Mario-esque thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Also, this biome, like this set of levels, has that gimmick twice.
Yes, yeah. The Clapper's Cavern, which apparently is the name of the seal. Uh-huh. The seal will freeze water now, so you can run across it. So it turns lava into water, water into ice. Makes sense.
Uh-huh.
And if you fall in, you get attacked by a piranha instantly. And the water will rise a little bit here. This is tricky.
Yes.
Very tricky.
Yeah. The final exam for the climbing stuff is chain link chamber. You're climbing chains instead of ropes to kind of like climb up this well.
Yep. And then you get to Toxic Tower. This sucks. It's another auto scroller.
Hate it.
You're climbing and there's this tide of toxic sludge, and you go through all of the, almost all the animal friends. It's giving you a final exam for the animal friends. The animal friends suck, and Ratley is here, and Ratley is also required to suck. And he has, you have to use a super jump, which it is not tutorialized or anything.
No, this is the first time it's been required for like a critical path kind of thing.
And like, yes, at the time, reading the manual was necessary. I understand that. It is still weird design to give a power up a special ability that you don't have to use until the last level.
Yeah.
Of the game. Yeah.
It is like a disfavored way to do this. And like, it's not like it was, you know, it's not like they hadn't discovered, introducing a mechanic by requiring it. It's just that they decided that that they were exempt from that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just kind of rare.txt. You get to the Stronghold Showdown, and it's a throne room where Donkey Kong is being strung up here. He yells for help, but he gets yanked skyward because he's in Captain K. Rool's Flying Air Fortress, the Flying Croc. Not a great name.
No.
And we get one level before the actual boss here.
Yes. Really short. It's kind of weird that they even had one, but they needed a final exam for the Bramble levels. This one introduces a weird enemy, kind of like the wizard coat. I've got no idea what the fuck this is.
What it's supposed to represent.
Yeah. It's like a combination, like big hand and cat that will, it is unclear, based on, I mean, like this took several attempts for me to beat. It is unclear when it is going to damage you and when it is going to, grab you and throw you.
Yeah. I think these guys appeared earlier than this. But okay. It might have been one of the things in the levels of this is there are alternate paths through some of them. Again, you know, you called out the sonic similarity. That's very true, where there's a kind of a high road and a low road through some of these. You know, it's possible not to run into them, but these guys have been here before.
Yeah.
I think it's when you hit their back, they throw you.
Okay.
Or hit their front, rather, because their back is spiky.
Mm.
I have no idea what they are either.
Good luck seeing that, because it's a real settle down Beavis situation on top of this visual style.
Including like the Nedroid drawing of a cat, like somebody who's never seen a cat.
Bartholomew. I love Bartholomew.
Yeah, Bartholomew the cat. You have to race another squawk. Don't care for that. And then we have to use Diddy's cartwheel jump, which is the huge coyote time jump, where you kind of cartwheel off the edge and then jump and get really, really long distance. This brings us out to the K. Rool duel, which is the multi-phase final boss fight through this.
Yeah. This is a good boss fight. I like this as a final, as a final exam for the boss gimmicks kind of stuff. There are multiple phases on this. And the goal is to dodge his attacks until he shoots a regular cannonball that can be left behind. Like he has like a blunderbuss that is the size of the man.
Yeah. You may remember from Smash Brothers. He uses it in Smash Brothers. Yeah. He's going to try to vacuum you up with his gun. But you pick up and throw that cannonball and throw it back into him and kind of jam up his gun, which explodes on him. You have to do this several times. And he has also things he will throw that are hazards, like regular balls, spiky balls, or ghost balls that fly in these weird patterns, you know, kind of like the Medusas. Bouncing or spiraling patterns to dodge. And he just kind of keeps going. He gets more of the special balls and fewer of the ones you can throw back. And you are just waiting to get the ammo to throw it into his suction gun.
And you beat him. Did we mention that he's torturing Donkey Kong when you come in?
Yeah, he doesn't like him for some reason, but I don't know what it is.
No. Yeah. Donkey Kong's not verbal.
No.
Yeah.
It's hard to be mad at him. This is grown-up Donkey Kong Jr. You know, so presumably even like he was never a villain at any point on the original Donkey Kong, like Cranky Kong, who was kidnapping princesses at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy I think
Pauline was just a lady.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I think Cranky Kong might have just been a misogynist.
Yeah, he's just kidnapping ladies.
Yeah.
He doesn't care if they're princesses or not.
Nothing to see here. It's fine.
Nothing to see here. He's just, but then this guy has not done anything except rescue his dad. But he's got to go for some reason, get tortured. But you beat him. And Donkey Kong himself gets loose and does a Smash Brothers uppercut, launching K. Rool into the water, where he's eaten by sharks. The end of the series.
And then we get our evaluation, Cranky Kong, who calls this game an unnecessary sequel.
Yeah.
And that rare kind of deal. Yeah,
kind of the rare humor, which is going to be one of the biggest, your mileage may vary things with rare generally. Like there are people who find these animal designs funny. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that to disparage them. It's just, I've seen it. Like, I've seen people like, no, they're like cute and funny. And they're talking about like a Banjo-Kazooie design.
Yeah.
That looks like what if, like, I don't know, a snake with googly eyes. And I just don't get it. I don't have the antibodies to find that kind of cartooning funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, personally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you get to the end, Cranky Kong, kind of lets you know how you do, based on the DK coins you found. And it gives you ranks. Link, Yoshi, and Mario are on there. Mm-hmm. And you want to outrank them. You can see in the back, you can see Sonic shoes and Earthworm Jim's gun next to a garbage can that says no hopers, which I like a lot. Fuck those guys. And then the Lost World, which I didn't play. This is if you get enough creme coins at Clubba's kiosk, he'll launch you into this special set of levels. These are ultra hard challenge levels.
Yes.
Think, you know, Super Mario World, ultra hard challenge levels.
Your groovies and whatnot.
Yeah, tubulars and such. I didn't do these, but if you do these, all of them, you get a really complicated rematch against K. Rool.
Mm-hmm. And at the end, if you succeed, you sink all of the islands.
Yes, you've made sure that nothing could ever grow here again and destroy this entire culture along with your animal friends who are still on board.
Yes.
And that's Donkey Kong Country 2, which again, begrudgingly, this is a good game.
Yeah.
I don't want to play it again. I don't want to play any of the other ones, really. Mm-hmm. Like, it's interested in things that I'm not interested in a platformer.
Yeah.
I guess would be the way I would put it.
A difference of priorities, I think.
Yes.
You know, not just the visual trade-offs that you get. Well,
that's a huge part, right? Like, wanting to look at something and being charmed by graphics, like that same kind of, I'm looking at a snake with googly eyes and I think it looks funny and cool is a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, if I was looking at the stuff and it was a joy to behold, that would also influence me.
Yes.
You know, and that's 100% subjective.
Yes.
As a thing. But just in terms of level design, if I wireframe this, platformers can be interested in different things. This would be a good dispatch topic for this month because we're doing this and we're doing Bloodlines next. Mm-hmm. And Bloodlines is also a platformer that's interested in very different things.
Yes.
Than this. You know, platformers are not a unigenre. Mm-hmm. And whatever you would call this kind of British challenge-based, collect-a-thon-based, kind of trial and error-based platformer is just not what I want from a platformer generally.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good example of it, though.
Yeah. And you can see them inventing a lot of stuff here that would ultimately become their, you know, their signature kind of stuff and be taken to rare signature and be taken to ridiculous excess later on.
Yes.
They abuse the privilege.
It's such a weird, it's probably the most popular game studio that I really have no time for.
Yeah.
You know, people put these guys up with the bigwigs. You know, people talk about Rare, like they're up there with like Capcom and shit. And like, I just got no time for their styles. Like what they want to do is just not good to me, just generally. Mm-hmm. Never played Viva Pinata. Maybe that's good.
It's Animal Crossing. The only game of theirs that I like, that I really will fuck with is
Make Rattle and Roll.
Yeah. Look at them go. Yeah. I hate Rattly. Yeah. But what I will fuck with is the Banjo Kazooie Nuts and Bolts.
Oh, where you make cars.
Yeah. Where you're, you know, trying to beat challenges and you have to design the car in order to do it. That is a really cool idea executed very well.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah. I believe it to be true without ever having played it and probably.
Well, it's fucking Banjo Kazooie. Like, yeah, who's going to sign up for that?
There is something to not wanting to look at stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like I wish I was above that, but I'm not. And also levels of tolerance are different. You know, I play Isaac. You know, there's ways to not reasons not to look at that. It's the opposite of my styles. Very happy to have done it. I feel like the show would not be complete if we hadn't done an entry in this. You know, so it's good in terms of the interest of breath.
Yes. Stuff. So thank you, Travis, for forcing our hands.
Yeah, I had a modicum of fun. Like, it was you know, interesting to think about. If you are hearing this and you're any kind of marginalized person and you have a project or product you'd like us to shout out, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. Include relevant information. We'd be happy to do it. Mm-hmm. If you have things to say about this month's games, which are The Final Station plus The Only Traitor, Donkey Kong Country 2, or Castlevania Bloodlines, please write in at duckfeed.tv/contact. If you have multiple thoughts on multiple games, do multiple responses, and please keep them brief and to the point.
Yes. The deadline for April's games is April the 15th. As a reminder, those games are Dead Space 2, We Heart Katamari,
Halo Wars and Resident Evil Requiem. Gary, Requiem is so good.
Is it good?
Oh my God.
I've been avoiding everything I can about it. I ordered my copy. It arrived today. I really like that when people are talking about it, they're like, oh, this is the things they're saying that are bad about it are things that I like.
Yes.
Like, it's really fun, but it's so enamored with Resident Evil's past. And I'm like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I like that if it's not going to get to the, you know, the degree there's a level of virus names, they'll make me check out. But I'm very happy to be back in these locations. Like, I want to see the police station again.
Yeah.
Very excited for that. And I got it on PS5 because Liv really wants to watch as a Leon Kennedy fangirl. Yeah. So it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Yeah, no, I just, I'm streaming that right now, actually. So you got to promote your, you promoted your album. I can promote my streams.
Why not listen to my band while you're watching the stream?
Just
shut off Kay's voice and put on some songs.
Yeah. The compromise. That way nobody's happy.
Yeah. Or you can listen to Kay's voice and look at the cover of the album and not watch the gameplay.
Yeah. We're not your boss. But yeah, no, that's a twitch.tv/duckfeedtv. I stream horror games on Friday and Saturday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, or wait, no, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific.
You don't have to say Eastern anymore.
It's
cool. You're out here, so you don't have to do it.
I don't have to do it. It's just,
but then figure it out. It's cool. It's a West Coast privilege. If you want to hear the bonus episodes that we have, you want to hear that Bloodlines episode and that Requiem episode, which is going to slap. All of our Resident Evil episodes are very good. They're very popular. You have to be a patron to hear the full thing. Go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can go there, hear those, hear all the old ones, hear a bunch of bonus shows. You can also go there and sponsor an episode to get us to play it. All of that stuff's very appreciated. Not only do you get a lot of things, but it lets us keep the lights on.
Yes.
Which we need to do because lights are required to do things.
Yes.
And either way, we'd love it if you rated, reviewed, and subscribed to the podcast in your directory of choice, told your friends, posted about it. If you're on the Patreon, join us on the Discord, chat there. If you're on Reddit, we have a Reddit now. Share our stuff. Just go crazy. Yeah. Be the street team you want to see in the world. Be the street team we want to see in the world.
Yes. And go crazy thanking our producer, Gwen. Thank you, Gwen.
Yep. Big thanks to Gwen. What should they watch out for until next time?
Watch out for podcast perfidy.